Pure Dog Talk is the podcast on purebred dogs. We talk to the legends in the sport and give you tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves. Today is Mentor Monday, and we have one quick reminder from your Dog Show Superintendents Association. Get your entries in early. It's a win-win. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and I am joined today by one of my dearest friends in dog shows. Our guest today is Dinah Bagenstos. She is the president of the Professional Handlers Association. And Dinah and I are going to talk today about a topic that I think a lot of people are very interested in. If you choose to hire a professional handler, how do you do that? Who do you pick? How do you know who to trust with your kids? That's something that I think people feel really strongly about. And so Dinah and I are going to talk about that today, and we're going to give you some good ideas. So thank you, Dinah. Thank you for your time and welcome.
Thank you very much. I am glad to do this.
Excellent. So the 411, everybody gets to give it. Tell us your background. Tell us how you got started, how long you've been doing this.
Okay. I started actually when I was about 10 years old through the 4-H Dog Obedience Program.
Yay, 4-H!
I think it's a great program, and I wish that we had more kids interested in that. We seem to be losing some interest, but that was my background. I had a wonderful leader, Artis Edling, who was amazing with me. She started out with me with a very grumpy Labrador, spent endless hours with me, and convinced me that this is really what I wanted to do. I have worked with dogs probably my whole life, realistically. Started with the 4-H and then did junior showmanship at the AKC shows and grew up thinking that someday I wanted to be a handler. Had a lot of mentors with the PHA
and
program.
Who were your mentor?
Ollie Click was one of the most important people to me in our organization, in the dog world. Rick Bird had a lot of influence. Paul Bohr, as a matter of fact, who used to scare the daylights out of me, was an extremely big help. So I hope I haven't left anybody out. Some really good people in the dog show world. Bill Holbrook, one of our retired AKC reps, was very supportive, very instrumental in this. So it's just been a great world for me to grow up and to do what I'm doing now.
And you married Rick Bagenstos in...
26 years ago, 25 years ago, yes.
And you've had the opportunity to watch your whole family.
Absolutely.
So Luke and Rowan...
Yes, when Rick and I got married, it was kind of a package deal. We had the kids who have just been amazing kids. Luke has chosen to go into the dog world and I think is very, very successful. He and his wife, Rowan, and of course, the grandkids are wonderful. And what a great family sport because we have the grandkids that we can see. John.
And you watch them show dogs.
I do. I watch them show dogs. And I think Tegan's big thing is she's going to beat grandma in the silky ring. And that's okay. We can handle
that.
John is married to Jennifer Holmberg Bagenstos, who has been showing dogs. And actually, on a little side note, Jennifer worked for Rick and I for several years and met John, and they kind of didn't like each other for many years, and then surprise.
Let's talk about the mentoring process that you and we all do as handlers. So you were mentored by Rick and Nancy and by Bill Holbrook and by some of these people. In turn, you have mentored the upcoming generation.
Absolutely.
And it's not just Jennifer and Luke.
No.
Darcy.
We had Darcy. I have gotten blank on her last name now. But
it's Cantor now.
Right. But yes,
it used to be something else.
And she did a great job for us. We had the twins, Ricky and Stephanie, that worked for us. Now, Ricky is biomedical engineer and Stephanie's manager for Kohl's, but they both claim that the experience they had with the dog world was a really amazing thing. Their mom has come to us several times and said they couldn't have learned in school what we were able to teach them every summer while working at the dog show. We've had a lot of kids over the years that have just done a really great job. We've had kids from all over the country that have come and stayed with us in the summertime. We have Sarah with us right now, who's not a kid anymore. Well, she's 22. But
I know, they all feel like kids.
They
but
do.
Not.
They do. I met Sarah in Alaska. She was about 8 years old, and she was going to come down someday and work for us. And by golly, here she is.
Here she is.
Yep.
Right. And I think, Dinah, you've touched on something that's so important to us as handlers, is the mentorship that we give to the people that come and work for us and our clients. So let's talk a little bit
about our clients and about that handler-client relationship.
There can be some really, really good relationships. Clients have become extremely good friends with us over the years. They are family. We have family dinners at the dog shows. We have people that we start out maybe showing one dog for them, and they've had others that have come. David and Laura Dunn and David Kirshner have been great clients and friends. And one of the things we look forward to every year for the last 3 or 4 years is going to the Florida shows, because we get to go to Disney World, and they're as big a Disney freak as we are.
Right.
So, but we have become very, very good friends with them. We have a lot of clients we've shown for many years. We have Don Harris that we've shown for 25 or 26 years with Cockers. There have been some really great people that we have become involved in. There have been a few that maybe the mix has not been right, and we have suggested other directions for them to go. But we just have developed so many really good family relationships in this that's a great thing.
And I think, Dinah, again, you touch on something that's super important, all right? We as handlers, we have great relationships with a lot of clients. And sometimes we have clients that, as you say, the mix isn't right. It's not a good nick, if we want to use breeding terms. Whatever it is, there is a good handler for every client and vice versa. And so I'd like you to talk and give our audience and our listeners, many of whom show their own dogs, okay? So you're showing your own dogs. That is awesome. And we give you mad props. If you choose to hire a handler, there is no harm, no foul.
No, not at all.
And how do you select a good handler? How do you choose someone to send your family member with to travel thousands of miles down the road?
I think the first thing that you do is you go to a dog show and you observe. And you don't just observe handlers in the ring. You walk back by their setup. You observe the setup. Is it clean? Is it neat? And keeping in mind, if you have a really crazy schedule, you're going to see brushes on the ground. You're going to see things that have been kind of strewn about. Maybe the towel's not hanging quite right.
Might look like a hurricane.
Exactly. Because you run back and you're trying to get that dog up to the ring and you're trying to get it groomed to the best of your ability. Or you have your assistants that are working diligently to get those dogs ready for you. So do take that into consideration. But is there poop in the X-pens? Are the X-pens clean? Does the equipment look like it's in good repair? And keep in mind, grooming equipment can be expensive, as exercise pens. So while it's not shiny new,
there could be a little rust.
Exactly. My X-pens, you're going to find rust on them. They are carried underneath the truck. They get moisture in those tubs. And you're going to see that. But the setup, as a rule, look clean. Does the vehicle look safe? Does it look like it can get the dogs down the road? I just think that's extremely important. Are they dressed? You don't have to be big and fancy, but you need to be dressed appropriately, dressed clean. Blue jeans in the ring for handling, not such a good thing. Unless it's pouring down rain, and then there's an exception to that.
I love those days!
Yeah, we've all seen that. Absolutely. And also look at them objectively. Are they getting along well with their assistants? Are they screaming and yelling? Or are they giving good directions and asking for help? Look and see how the setup is run. And again, you're going to have crazy times, but just take a look and make sure that everything looks like it's going fairly smoothly.
Right. And how do you feel about, we're going to talk to X number of former clients, or we're going to talk to our peers? You are going to hire a handler.
Right.
How are you going to pick somebody?
I'm going to ask for references. I'm going to observe. I'm going to watch. Mm-hmm. One of the funniest stories we've ever had is we had a woman call me and say, I would really like for you and Rick to show our Basset. And I said, well, great. Can you give me some more information? And she said, well, we've watched you for a couple of years. And I said, well, that's good. You've been showing then. And she said, well, off and on. But she said, you do occasionally stop at the Walmart in Centralia when it's late and spend the night. We go into Walmart every Monday morning for our prescriptions. We have sat in the car and watched you at the Walmart getting your dogs out and exercising them.
Oh, my gosh.
And she said, every one of them comes out and you've potted them. You've played with them. You've given them a little pat. You've run around with them. They get a drink of water and then you put them back in the truck. And that was a little creepy in the beginning because
creepy.
I thought, this is kind of strange, but it just goes to show you don't know.
They're always watching you.
People are watching you. And I mean, what a great reference to refer back to. And she said, I watched you at the shows, but that was most important to me, to see what you were doing behind the scenes with your dogs. And after I got the initial ooh out of my system, I thought, well, you know what? That's kind of a cool way to to have that done. So it's kind of interesting how that goes.
Right. So what are then the expectations? Okay, so I'm coming to you. I have my Irish setter.
Okay.
And I have owner handled it to a few single points, but my schedule's crazy. I'm struggling with getting the majors. I'm going to come to you and I'm going to say, can you please finish the championship on my Irish setter? Talk to us about those kind of expectations. How do you lay out a plan for each individual dog?
Well, I think what you have to do is talk to the owner and see what they have in mind. Do they want you to take the dog on and the dog travel with you? Do they want to meet you at the shows? Who's going to be doing the grooming? Do they want to do the grooming and we do the finesse work or the finishing up? Or do they want to meet us at ringside? There's any number of ways to do it. We have some clients that have come to us and said, I would like you to take the dog on. We have a client from Taiwan. The dog obviously is not ringside. The dogs from this gentleman come to us and stay with us. So we have a board fee and the handling and the shared expenses with this dog. Versus maybe someone who says, I really like to come to the shows. I have a good time. I just think I need some help getting these majors. Then you decide, do you want to do the grooming? How do you want to do this? Do you want to drop the dog off on Friday night again? Or do you want to bring the dog to us? Keeping in mind that we do need to do some bonding time. Even with the ringside pickups, you've got to have a bond with those dogs. Right. Maybe suggesting to them the dog comes home with us for a couple of weeks, learns that we are the cookie people, and then they can come back and forth and come in. So it really depends on each individual client or prospective client to determine what they want with the dog.
Right. And I think super important, each individual dog, not just a breed, but within the breed. Okay. So certain breeds, certain individuals within a breed require more time, more exposure, more grooming.
Absolutely.
So what happens when a client comes to you and says, I have this dog, put a few single points on it. I really feel like I'm out of my comfort zone. And you look at the dog and say, okay, it's a pretty good dog of its breed, but oh my, the grooming.
Exactly.
Okay. How do you handle that?
We have to sit down and talk about maintenance grooming. For instance, an Old English sheepdog comes to your house and has to stay with you. Maybe they want this dog special. To have a dog in specials coat is a lot of extra grooming. An Old English sheepdog has a lot of hair. If it's not cared for correctly, it can fall out. It can be matted. It could be stained. There's a lot of issues with that. So you have to sit down and figure out what's going to be
with the client.
Right, with the client, what would be best, what we would expect from them and what they can expect us to do. And understand that the cost is going to be more for a coated dog to come and stay and the maintenance. I specialed a giant schnauzer for 2 years that I was at my kennel, probably three nights a week when we weren't at dog shows working on that dog.
And you have a boarding kennel that you run at home.
Exactly. Exactly. So we have to take that into consideration. Do I have the time to devote to your dog? That's something I would have to look at. Do I have the time to maintain that sheepdog's coat or to strip that giant schnauzer down? Or is this something maybe we should go with other options?
Referral.
Exactly.
I'm at a point in my life, I have referred on all of my Newfoundland clients. For example, my large, heavily coated giant breeds, I can't.
Yeah.
I physically can't do it anymore.
Right.
So I think it's really, really important that handlers be honest with themselves, be honest with their clients, and the clients be honest with the handlers.
I agree. We had someone come to us yesterday, as a matter of fact. Well, we had talked to them earlier in the week, and they had a mastiff who just needs a couple points to finish, but the woman has to have some surgery and is not going to be able to do it. She came to us and I said, let's meet on Friday. We met her last night, met with the dog, and she ended up taking the dog in the ring herself today. We could not get the response we needed out of the dog. It was not fair to the dog, who did not want to do this with anybody else. It was not fair to the client to say, I'm going to take X number of dollars and run around the ring, and your dog's not going to look good. So you have to be honest with people and say, I think we could do this, or maybe we need to go a different route.
Right. I think, Dinah, you make a very, very important point. And I think it's a point that clients need to hear. And I think it's a point that handlers need to hear.
I agree.
And speaking as two members of the Professional Handlers Association, we also have the American Kennel Club Registered Handlers Program.
Yes.
Both of these organizations are designed to maintain criteria for professional handlers.
Absolutely.
And to set the bar. And so I would ask you, Dinah, as president of the Professional Handlers Association, to provide us with some input. because my thought process as a member of PHA, as a zone rep for PHA, is that if you can't do the job properly, you don't take the money.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree with you on that. If you're not comfortable with a breed and or with a dog, then you do not accept that. We have a code of ethics, PHA, and I know that the AKC registered handlers do also. We have a code of ethics.
Can you speak to that? Can you give us some ideas what's in the code of ethics? So that, I mean, I can do it, but you're the PHA.
Well,
the
one of the ones that jumps out at me just because I've dealt with it, and this may recently, and this may sound a little petty, is you never go after another client's or another handler's clients. This can be a real
issue. This can be a real bugaboo. So let's talk about it. Let's say, hey, you know what? I have Joe Blow showing my standard schnauzer.
All right.
Pick a breed.
Okay.
We're going to say Joe Blow is showing your standard schnauzer. I no longer am getting along well with Joe Blow. I would like to change the representation of my dog to Annie Bellotti.
Okay. All right.
Sorry, Annie. I didn't mean to use your name. Okay, so how do we do that? What is the proper procedure? Who handles that? How is that handled?
If you are having issues with your handler and you decide you need to go a different direction, you have every right to hire and fire the person that is on. And I don't even want to say hire and fire. You have every right to go a different direction with your dog.
I think hire and fire is pretty good.
But it's pretty much the truth. You have to make sure that your bill is current with that handler before you go to another handler. Anybody who is a member of PHA, AKC Registered Handlers, the Dog Handlers Guild, everybody that's a member has their code of ethics that says, I will then go to that handler and say, Joe Blow has approached me about showing this dog. Is your bill clear? You keep it on a very professional basis. And that's one way we have to support each other. If Joe Blow comes to me and I say, okay, I'll take this dog on, and then I find out he owes a substantial amount of money to that handler, that's not something that you want to do. You want to make sure that that account is clear. You keep it professional. Right. You keep it very businesslike. Right. Yes, the account is clear, or no, it's not.
And if the answer is no, it's not, we don't take the client.
No, we do not take the client. Absolutely not.
Period. End of conversation.
Yes.
Because the idea of the Professional Handler Association, the Dog Handlers Guild, the American Kennel Club Registered Handlers Program, we are all working together.
Yes, we are. We're all in this dog world together.
Absolutely. And what we need to understand as clients and as handlers is that if Joe Blow comes to me and says, I want you to show my Peruvian frog hound. Currently, Dinah Bagginsaw is showing that Peruvian frog hound. And I come to you and say, hey, Dinah, this guy wants me to show his Peruvian frog hound. Is his bill due? Or is it current? Or what's up with that? And you say, well, bill's current. He can do what he wants to do. If you say, nope, bill's not current, like,
that's a shutdown. Peace out. Yep, that's a major shutdown. Absolutely.
So as handlers, as clients, this is an important piece of that conversation.
And keep in mind also that if you decide you're going to change handlers, if the entries for a show that you've already contracted that handler to with have closed, technically, you need to stay with that handler for those shows. If you're changing...
Or at least pay for it.
Exactly. Yeah, because you have, again, taken that person on. As a handler, you count the number of dogs that you have, only so many spaces. If you're counting on that space being full and it's not there anymore, then you could possibly turn down another dog
to fill that
place. Right. You can make that. So you need to keep that in mind also. If you're thinking about changing, be fair to all parties.
Right.
Be fair to all parties.
I think be fair to all parties would get us really far down the road most of the time. And there's an awful lot that goes into this. And there's a lot of emotion.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of fire.
Yes.
There's a lot of competition. But I think that one of the things that is most important is that the professional handler is always going to put the dog's well-being.
Absolutely. If you get up in the morning and you have a client on the truck that maybe the dog isn't feeling well, maybe there's a loose stool or the dog's just a little off, you owe it to the dog to not take them in the ring. And you need to make that
clear. Call up the client.
Exactly. You need to make that clear to the clients. If the dog appears to be ill, then whatever, it does not
stress,
go in the ring.
Bad water, doesn't matter.
Exactly, exactly. The dog, for lack of a better word, the dog stays in the truck is what mm-hmm. happens. And you call the client immediately and make them aware of the fact that the dog's not feeling well. You don't take that dog in the ring just to run around the ring and make money. You just can't. It's not fair to the dog. The dog will remember they had a really crappy time out there. It's not fair to the clients.
And there's a lot of times that sort of decision making is made by the handler.
Yes.
And I think primary in that is that the handler has to be given the owner's permission to make the best choice for the dog.
Yes.
And the handler needs to communicate that decision-making process with the client.
Yes, absolutely.
So there's a lot of moving parts here.
Yes, there is, very much so.
All right, very good. Okay, so expectations. I hire Dinah Bagenstos to show my Peruvian frog hound. I say to Dinah, hey, Dinah, I want my Peruvian Froghound to be a champion. Mm-hmm. What are your expectations as a handler? What are my expectations as a client?
Okay, as a handler, I would expect the dog to be delivered to me, whether it's a ringside pickup or staying with us, to be delivered to me in good condition physically.
Good health.
Current vaccinations, not runny eyes, dog that is basically ready to go in the ring, except for the grooming. There are some breeds that require a lot of grooming, and owners are not able to do all of that. But I would expect the dog to come to us clean and happy, good weight, not long toenails, teeth cleaned, coat in as good a condition as it could possibly be. And I would expect that client would be able to pick up that dog, whether it's in 2 weeks or 2 months, knowing it's going to come back the same. In good health, good coat.
In as good a condition as it arrived.
Exactly.
Or better.
Or better. You got it.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. Okay. And so let's just say we're going to continue our theory of the Peruvian Froghound.
Okay. All right. I like that.
And so I, as the client, give you my Peruvian Froghound, and I want to watch it at the dog show.
Okay.
But the Peruvian Froghound is obsessed with me.
All right, then we have to work out some details on that. Do you want to work with the dog and have the dog see you at ringside and try to work through it? Do you want to hide? Maybe get the dog done a little faster. What are your choices? Keeping in mind, if you want to work it through so that you can sit at ringside, you're going to have some handling fees that are probably going to be paying for training rather than
actually winning,
competing with the dog out there. Exactly. So you need to keep that in mind. And we have people that have done that. They say, I really want to sit at ringside. I'm going to start out right now. And I say, you're welcome to do that. But please keep in mind that I can't make you any promises, which I wouldn't do anyway, but I can't make you promises that we're going to have a great presentation in the ring. I admit, I had a flat coat 2 years ago. They brought her up to the grooming setup. We groomed her, took her to the ring. She needed a major, and it was major spot on with the flats, and they're really hard to find with that particular breed. And I got in the ring, and I started to go on the go-around, and I darn near went to my knees because the dog crossed in front of me. And
to
I
go
looked
see
up
mommy.
To see mom, and I looked up at mom standing ringside pretending to hide behind someone. And did I scream? Yeah, I kind of did. And that little moment, it was something like, get out of here, who she promptly ran and hid behind the barn. We did finally get the major on the dog that day, but it was a lot of work to pull that dog together.
Yeah, my clients know the Auntie Laura eyebrow. Once it hits my hairline, you're in deep doo-doo.
Yeah. Exactly, exactly.
Okay, so as a client, my responsibility is to not make your job more difficult.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. Yes, yes.
Okay, very good.
And we actually have had the client that sat up on the hill with binoculars. That's a little strange, but it happens.
Whatever it takes.
Yes,
it happens. I had a client that couldn't even be in the same state. So.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so with all of that, the client stays downwind of the dog, if it's outside, all of these details that go with that. Further expectations, and I've hired you to show my Peruvian Froghound to number one Peruvian Froghound in the country.
Okay.
What are we talking about here? What kind of time? What kind of money? What kind of life are we talking about here?
You're talking about giving this dog priority, which is another subject we can get into about how does the handler to prioritize their
We're
their
getting
dogs.
There.
Right. Right. So you pretty much have to determine where you stand with that handler. Do they have a dog that's ahead of you that maybe they've been showing for a client for 15 years? Mm. But you have to say, I'm willing to pay X number of dollars to make this dog the number one dog in the country. you have to be willing to maybe fly that handler and dog to a place where there's a huge entry for that.
Of Peruvian frog
hounds. Exactly. Absolutely. So those are things to take into consideration as far as the cost goes. Boy, you're looking at the overall care of the dog, the extra time involved with that.
So that's going to be a pretty hardcore. You're going to make it the number one Peruvian frog hound, or heck, you're going to make it the number one dog in the whole world or in the whole country or what have you. It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. It's an investment, and you have to make sure that you are willing to make that investment. The last thing I want is for somebody to go and put a second mortgage on their house to pay for their dog. I'm really adamant about that. I just shake my head and say,
please don't do that.
Don't do that. It's no dog show is worth that. Just not. So it's something you really do need to take a hard look at.
Right. Excellent. Okay. And so from a handler's perspective, someone comes to you with a Peruvian froghound, and it's not a very good Peruvian froghound.
Okay. You owe it to them to be honest with them. Example, several years ago, someone drove up from Los Angeles. They said they wanted me to evaluate a dog. They drove up from Los Angeles. They pulled up in my driveway. I was in...
all the way up to Kennewick, Washington.
Yeah. I was in the grooming shop, and I looked out the window, and this woman got the dog out, and I said, no.
And from the window.
From the window. And my husband, Rick, said, you can't say that. And I said, I can. I said, no, I can't do this. And he said, Dinah, you can't. I said, I cannot take this dog on. You cannot take this dog on. We walked outside. We met. We looked at the dog, moved the dog a little bit and chatted. And I said, you've got a nice dog right now, but you have two parts, the front and the back. They're not matching.
They're not the same.
It's not going to work right now. If you choose to pursue this, it's going to cost you a lot of money and a lot of frustration. And I am not willing to do that. If you want to go a different direction, I will help you find someone. If you choose to wait a year, I think that maybe in a year we can see what this dog can do. And she said, okay, I'll wait. She got back in the car. And a year later, we finished him in 3 weekends. But it's when she got that dog out of the car, there was no way that I could take that dog on and take her money to do it. It just would not have been a fair situation.
Right.
So you owe it to people to be upfront and honest with them.
And as clients, you owe the respect to the handler for giving you the honesty to...
I agree.
...listen to what they have to say from their experience, from their knowledge, from their years put in.
Absolutely.
So we were talking just a little bit earlier about priority. And priority can be a real challenge.
It's a real challenge.
I think, in my opinion, the worst thing about being a dog handler... the single worst thing, and you can tell me if you agree, single worst thing is I got 3 dogs in the ring. Which one do I show?
Absolutely. First of all, out of those 3 dogs, if one of them is your personal dog, however, that one,
bottom line,
that one is
gone away.
Yep. That's something.
The 12-year-old shows that one.
That's right. The real AKC, PHA, Dog Handlers Guild handler, the real professional handler, is bound to have their own dogs to show because those dogs take a back seat.
Sadly, but true.
Right. Your own dogs don't count. They count as far as expenses divided, etc., but they don't count. So then you have to decide out of those 3, one of them being yours, the other 2 are client dogs, how do you make that decision? And everybody has a different idea, and some change it around depending on each individual situation. Mm-hmm. We have a cocker.
What's a good rule of thumb? So if you're a client, you know, coming into this situation, what's a good rule of thumb? What should you expect for the handler to do?
You should expect the handler to do their best to get to your dog. If they cannot do it, they can't do it, they need to explain to you that they will have another handler show the dog, someone that they would be comfortable taking the dog in. And that's the beauty of what we do for a living, is we help each other out regularly on a regular basis. Class animals normally do not take precedence over a special. A dog that's being campaigned actively as a special and competing for national points is going to take priority over a class animal that you're trying to get. You're not trying to push them back. You're not saying that they're any less, but your specials are going to take priority over that. If you have 2 specials and different breeds but are in the same group and you win the breed with both of them, then you have to figure out who is going to be your priority for that group. You can base it on several things. You can base it on, I've shown for Joe Blow for X number of years, or you can say, gosh, I showed this special 2 weeks ago to this judge and he didn't like it, so perhaps I should stay on the other dog where he might have a better chance.
See what he thinks of it.
Right. Give that dog a chance. But in no way, shape, or form, putting the first dog down. You get that dog in the ring with somebody reputable, and it could be he'll get a different look because it is somebody different on the dog.
Well, and I think, too, just has to be that level of trust and communication.
Yes.
And I think communication is the most critical piece.
Absolutely.
and you're talking to your clients, you're talking to your handler, you can work out almost anything. Mm-hmm. But if anybody blindsides the other one, absolutely, that's when things go really badly.
Yep. I agree completely.
Right.
Yes, that's very true.
Okay. So open lines of communication.
Extremely important. And I know that sometimes I'm probably not the best and I end up...
Oh, Dinah!
But you do, as a rule, you do need to touch base with it and determine how you're going to do it. We have some people that are great with a text. They want to know when you can get to your phone at the end of the day or after the dog's being shown. Simply send them a text. You have others that want that phone call, and you need to tell them what you are willing and able to do. If you have a very
able is a really big part of that.
If you have a large string of dogs because it's Portland weekend or Drew mm-hmm. City cluster, you may not get to that phone until maybe 8 or 9 o'clock at night, if you're lucky. And so that conversation may be a very short conversation, or you may get a 6 o'clock in the morning call. I'm so sorry, I blew it. I didn't get you called last night, but it was 11 o'clock by the time we got dogs done, because the dogs and their care are the priority. That's the most important thing. And I've had a couple of disagreements. It's 10 o'clock and you haven't called me. Well, because we're at the Rose City cluster and I'm still in the building getting the dog squared away. And that is most important. Do you want me to spend time taking care of your dog or being on the phone? And I choose to make sure your dog is fed and exercised and comfortable and ready for bed. So excellent. You need to set up with your clients what your communication, what you're able to do with it.
Right. And I think that, again, it goes back to communication. Right? Yes. When you take on that client and you take on that dog and you sit down and say, okay, here's the deal. Reality check. I got X number of dogs. I may not call you until Sunday night. If it's a big deal, I'll call you and tell you.
Exactly.
If it's not a big deal, you're probably going to hear from me on Sunday.
That's right. Yep. I agree completely. If we have dogs that do well in the group, then we try to communicate immediately.
Get a huge major.
Exactly.
Okay, great. Yeah,
finish that championship or that grand. You got it.
Right. So I think that's kind of an area that I see handler clients sort of bumping heads, is that communication.
Yes, I agree.
And I understand your frustration. I have said many, many, many times, when I am no longer able to show my own dogs, I will have to get guinea pigs, because I would be the very worst client ever.
I agree. I understand completely. Yes.
The few times that I've sent my personal dogs with friends, other handler friends, I'm like, what do you mean? It's 4:30.
That's exactly
why haven't you called me?
Right.
You promised.
Yep.
Okay, so we understand where the clients are coming from. We totally
absolutely
do. On the other hand, we also have the reality of a lot of work
and
not always a lot of time.
That's
so
very
we
true.
Beg your forgiveness and your patience.
Please.
Lots and lots. Yeah. Okay, so suggestions going forward for people who are either going to hire a handler for the first time, or who have additional concerns about professional handlers, people that they want more information, they want more knowledge, they want to gather details. Where do they go?
First thing I would suggest is, if you're thinking about hiring a handler, go to some of the websites. Go to the PHA Dog Handlers website. Go to the AKC Registered Handlers website.
I don't know if the Dog Handler Guild has one.
I don't know if they do or
I
not.
I looked not long ago.
I know that they don't have a real strong membership right now. I don't know if they do or not. But start with the websites. Look at the handlers that are in your area. Mm-hmm. If you want your dog shown in the area, look and see who is in your area that's on those websites.
Find an area of emphasis. So, for example, you have a Shih Tzu. Uh-huh. You are probably not going to hire a Mastiff handler.
Exactly. Exactly. No, that's a very good point. Watch that handler, and let's say you have a Silky Terrier that you want to have out in the ring. Go watch that handler show dogs for the day and see, do they handle a lot of toys to them? Do they talk to them and find out if that's a breed that they are comfortable with, familiar with, willing to learn to take in the ring, and do they have time to do
that? Great. Oh, that's a great segue. Okay, how are we doing on time? Okay, we're going to do this really quick. So, you're a handler. You don't know everything about Peruvian Froghounds.
No.
So how do you take on that first Peruvian Froghound?
If they come to me, I am very honest and say to them, I am not really familiar with their breed. If you're interested in having me show the dog, I think the coat is something I could handle. Let me do some homework. Let me read about your breed.
Read the standard.
Let me observe the breed a bit. And I'm more than willing to listen to the input you can give me on this breed.
Right. And do you have someone that you recommend as a mentor in this breed
exactly
that I could learn from?
Absolutely.
So, for example, if someone comes to me and says, I want to have you show my Silky Terrier. I'm going to say, great, I'm going to go talk to Dinah and to Luke, and I'm going to find out about Silky Terriers, and then I'll tell you if it's worth my time.
Exactly. And that's what we need to do as handlers. We need to work together. I had somebody come a couple of weeks ago and say, can you help me do a Brittany? Mm-hmm. And I said, well, sure, I'd be glad to.
You guys have
to
done do a lot that.
Yeah, we've done a lot of Brittanys. And if I hadn't, I would say, let's talk to someone who knows on the grooming. When I started doing Cockers, I was scared to death. It was a sporting dog. I knew they needed to move. I had
Jerry Moon. God love Jerry Moon. Yeah. I spent hours at the knee, literally Absolutely. Sitting at the knee of Jerry Moon to learn how to do Cockers.
You got it. And you did it because you wanted to learn about it. And I still don't know everything, but I think do a fairly good job. I have learned a lot about that breed. I watched for a long time. I talked to a lot of people.
Irish Water Spaniels. When I first started showing Irish Water Spaniels, Stacy Duncan, Stacy, help me.
Absolutely. Yes.
Right. Way and I think that that's very important for us as handlers.
Yes.
Is to acknowledge, I don't know everything.
Paul Boer helped me.
Any stretch.
Oh my gosh. Many years ago, I finished a Bouvier and the client wanted it special. And there's a big difference in grooming a class dog and a special.
Oh yeah.
And I said, who do I go to? Right. And everybody said at that time, Paul was doing very well. Mm-hmm. Everybody said, talk to Paul. And I said, I'm afraid of Paul. I am truly afraid of that man. I respect him, but he scares the daylights out of me. And he took it upon himself, called me blonde, said, come over, spent 6 hours with me on one dog, groomed the non-judge side, and said, now make it match.
That's right.
And I worked, and I'd talk to him, and I'd work on it and go talk to him. But what a learning experience. Right. And we did okay after that.
Pretty but amazing. I think that is what I love about this sport, I guess, is I had the same thing. Don Rogers that taught me how to groom clumbers when my, parents got our very first one. That's who taught me clumbers.
I'll be darned.
Don Rogers.
Wow, that's amazing.
Because he showed dogs for Jetty Davidson, who sold my mom her first dog.
Excellent.
And so I was 13 years old and I said to Don, I'm going to be a professional handler someday. And you know what Don said? No!
No, you don't
want to
do that. Yes.
Go to school.
That's right.
But he still taught me everything I know about trimming clumbers today.
And you used it on many other breeds.
There's... Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So, all right. Well, thank you, Dinah. I've taken way too much of your time this evening. I really, really appreciate your time. Any other final parting comments, suggestions, ideas, encouragement?
I would say hang in there. Go talk to people. Decide if this is what you want to do. And don't be afraid to ask some of the professional handlers questions.
We don't bite.
We love to help. We do a lot of our PHA does a lot of our little propaganda here.
Here's your moment.
Yes, that's right. PHA does a lot of things, programs for juniors,
right,
including your clothing program, which I know is a different subject. We do fun matches. We do grooming setups. And we're more than willing, I should say, to help any of you.
Absolutely.
If you have a question, please come up and ask. If we don't know the answer, we'll try to help you
find someone. Out who does.
Exactly. So again, encourage people to stay involved in our sport. Don't hesitate to come to us and ask us. We are more than happy to help. We all started out just like you with that first dog.
Every single one of us.
And would love to be able to help somebody. I think there's nothing more fun for me than to mentor someone and then have them come up the next day and say, thank you for the class we went through last night. It was wonderful. And I put a major on my dog.
I put a major on my dog.
Yep.
I love that. Some of the shows that we do the clinics for like makes my life.
It is. It is. Well, you're always the problem solver when we do those. So it works out great. Yes.
No, bring it to Auntie Laura.
That's right. That's
we don't want to talk about it. All right. Well, thank you, Dinah. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
All right, listeners, we are back again with Allison Foley from Leading Edge Dog Show Academy. And Allison has sort of her version of my get up, stand up. So let's hear it, Allison.
Hey, Laura. So, yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about posture and body language. So with this one, I'm talking about the handler. We train our dogs and we get them to stand up and stand on their toes and bait for this and have the correct posture for their breed. But sometimes it's us, and that's myself included, that are letting our dogs down when we don't have the correct posture or body language.
Absolutely.
So what I mean by that is that you can even practice yourself. You can just walk around with your shoulders slumped and you walk around like Eeyore and your dog will do the same thing. But as soon as you like pick up the pace and you put on your happy face and your shoulders are square and you have a spring in your step, it would be amazed at how that goes down the leash and your dog is immediately happier as well. And I tell people, no matter how seasoned we are in the ring or how novice we are in the ring, we are automatically more nervous when we get in the ring. Even if those nerves are competitive nerves, our dogs don't necessarily understand that. So we have to make a concerted effort to be very positive and just have that super positive body language in the ring so that it goes straight down the leash to our dogs. And sometimes when we get into a tense situation because all of a sudden there's thunder and lightning or a door crashing or a dog outside the ring screaming because its foot is caught or something, we immediately react to that. So I usually use a word that helps me get over that. And it used to be pizza, and I'm not really sure why, but thank goodness it switched to kitty, because I find it hard to say like the word kitty, 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 like in any kind of sad voice. I've had people say to me, like, is your dog saying kitty? And I'm like, no, it's Jack. And they're like, oh, why are you saying kitty, kitty, kitty as you go around the ring? And I said, because it relaxes me and it makes me remember that I am helping my dog through this or encouraging my dog. You know, you're going, good boy, let's go. Come on, good boy. I'll use all those phrases, but I also go, kitty, 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 just to kind of like make them think about something else. So when it comes to moving your dog, that's what I like to talk about. When it comes to stacking our dogs, one thing I teach people when I'm helping them with handling is I tell them to think about Dirty Dancing and to think about Patrick Swayze when he said, this is my dance space and this is your dance space. You don't come in my space, I come in your space. And I try to use an analogy with people because I see them stacking their dogs and they're doing a great job. Their dog is stacked, you know, perfect for that breed. They have the head in the right place, ears are up, tails up, it's great. But their feet are underneath their dog's body or their arm is like over top of their dog's body. And you can't really see that dog and how great they've made it look because all you see is this person because they're so huddled around their dog. So I always tell people, once your dog is set up and looking perfect, then put your feet together. Stand up straight or kneel straight if you're with a breed that's on the ground. And get away from your dog so that you are showing your dog that you are out of your dog's dance space. So that your dog's posture can be seen, the judge can see the expression. And as a handler, you're supposed to be out of the way. You're supposed to be just let the dog shine on its own. So I hope people can use that analogy and it helps them understand what I mean.
Absolutely agree with you 100%. That's my 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. To stack the dog, 5 is presentation. And that means your body. Stand up. I love it.
Exactly. Yeah, I totally agree.
Okay, thank you so much, Allison, for joining us. For our listeners, I would encourage you to check out Leading Edge Dog Show Academy. Allison has some amazing programs there for you. And if you go to the website, Leading Edge Dog Show Academy website, which we'll have a link to on our website as well at Pure Dog Talk, Allison has some discounts for you, I think. Yes, Allison?
Yes, of course we do.
Excellent. And what is our code these days?
It's Pure Dog Talk 25 for a 25% discount.
Perfect. So everybody take a peek at that. Allison's got some great stuff if you want some really good interactive opportunities. So thanks, Allison. We really appreciate you a lot.
Thanks, Laura.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. This will help share the love with others out there in the sport. This has been Pure Dog Talk with your host, Laura Reeves. We hope you can join us next time as we continue on the journey to success with your purebred dog.